I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests discuss the history of the Confederacy in Athens, the monument downtown, and the ongoing conversations surrounding the issues. Those topics and more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. My guests today are Noah Johnson, co-founder and vice president of the Athens Anti-Discrimination Movement, UGA Professor Scott Nelson, Athletic Association Professor in the Humanities, and attorney and Athens business owner Russell Edwards. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
Thank you, Alexia.
You're very welcome. And I do want to ask you each to tell me a little bit about you, a little bit about your history, your background, how we got you here today. So I'll just start with Russell.
I'm a local business owner. I've been in Athens, Georgia since 2007. I went to law school here and graduated, met my wife, Ari. Now I have a toddler, Teddy, who's here with us. So love staying involved with everything happening downtown in our community, looking to make it a better place for everybody. So here I am.
Thank you. And Noah?
I'm Noah D. Johnson, co-founder of Athens Anti-Discrimination Movement. Myself and my wife, Mocha Johnson, have been here 5.5 years. We brought the Athens Hip Hop Awards here, the inaugural MLK Day Parade, and several other events to try to create more diversity downtown in Athens, Georgia.
And Professor Nelson?
So I taught for 22 years at the College of William Mary, and I just moved here to University of Georgia about a year ago. I do African-American history, labor history, Southern history, and also financial history. So delighted to be here, but mostly what I write about is Reconstruction.
And, you know, it's interesting. This is very Athens that nobody on this show is from Athens, but you're all obviously very involved in Athens, and that's very typical of Athens. I know that we are here because of so many events going on around the nation, the movement to kind of remove Confederate symbols, and in particularly in Charlottesville, where it ended up, the Unite the Right march and rally ended up with Heather Heyer being killed by a person who just drove into the crowd. That was something that galvanized the nation. I know something you did, Noah, you and Mocha had a conversation here in Athens after that. Tell me a little bit about that event.
It was called Charlottesville, a reaction from Athens, Georgia. And the reason we wanted to do that, like many other things we've done in the past, is to make sure that what's going on outside of Athens, Georgia doesn't leak into Athens, Georgia, and make sure that the locals aren't, you know, just programmed by what's going on in the media when we have our own actual experiences here in town that we can, you know, react to. And it was basically a conversation where people can get a chance to talk about the incidents that happened in Charlottesville, talk about some similar things in history that has taken place in Athens, Georgia, you know, back in the 1920s and the KKK taking over the local government, and just surface some history that people may not know that may be tied to some of the issues that we're having locally. But we just wanted to give people a chance to vent and to come together in solidarity, you know, against these type of things, and make sure we discuss the possible action plan, you know, how we react. We just don't want it to be the first time that the community is reacting when something like this happened. So, you know, if we can get together and talk about it and visualize how we would respond, I think that would be a better thing than just letting it happen.
Russell, you attended that conversation.
Well, and it was, the folks at the library said it was the largest event that they had ever hosted. And I believe the video is now available online at the library website. Yeah, it was a fascinating conversation. Local Athens figure Milton Leathers read a speech delivered by his grandfather, Andrew Cobb Irwin, a very famous speech that was delivered at the Democratic National Convention in 1924, I believe, that is termed the Klan Break. And
Bake.
Klan
Bake.
Bake?
Yeah.
Klan Bake. Okay. even interesting. So a speech where he proudly repudiated the Ku Klux Klan, Andrew Irwin, a prominent Athenian, one of many in that day that signed a petition in 1921, published in the newspaper, repudiating the Klan. The Klan was very active in Athens, Georgia. It was organized on April 13th, 1917, and their meetings were advertised on the front page of the newspaper for that entire year, all through 1917. They met at what was then called the Jester Building, which is now, it was demolished in the early 1900s, but it was right behind the Globe on Clayton Street. They met every week and had prominent members, had 10 ministers that were members of the Klan. They sought ministers to join because they recognized the power that they had over their congregation. Methodists, Baptists, the Athens First Christian Church, the West End Baptist Church, the East Athens Baptist Church, these were all organizations led by prominent Klansmen. There's a fascinating book I'll give a plug. It's called Behind the Mask of Chivalry, The Making of the Second Ku Klux Klan, written by Nancy McLean. She uncovered a trove of confidential KKK documents in a basement some years ago and wrote a book documenting the KKK's activities in Athens-Clarke County. It's a fascinating read.
And Professor Nelson, I know that you have lived in southern cities, and so the Confederacy, obviously, it's part of southern history.
Right.
What would you say to people when they are thinking about removing the monuments or protesting the monuments, and when people say it's just part of history, you can't erase history?
Right. It's part of history, but it's not really part of the American Civil War. It's really a part of the rise of Jim Crow. It's right around the time. These monuments are not erected immediately after the war. They're erected in the 1880s and 90s when the poll taxes are coming in. They're erected at the time when the white primary is being created in the 1890s. They're erected at a time when African Americans are being excluded almost permanently for almost 100 years from political participation. And it's a way, those Confederate monuments were a way of kind of reclaiming the space as a white space. That it was really about white supremacy. And so it's not, you know, we look at it and you think, well, this is just about people who died, which is, you know, and I'm all for public art, but it's not about people who died. You look at the monument that we have in Athens, and it's just the Confederate dead. There were lots of black and white Southerners who fought for the Union, black and white Athenians who fought for the Union. They're not on that statue. The statue is just about the Confederacy. It's just the most prominent person who fought in the Union from Athens, Montgomery Meigs, fought for the Union. And, you know, he was a quartermaster general for the Union. But there's no record of him. It's just about the Confederacy. And this is all about cementing the Democratic Party, ensuring that there are no black people in the Democratic Party, and saying, by these white Southerners, we run this town.
And when you hear Russell talking about, the Milton Leathers grandfather,
mm-hmm. right.
making
mm-hmm.
that yeah. bold, mm-hmm. I mean, that was bold, that was public.
Yes. Yeah.
That seemed almost unheard of. Maybe I don't know the history, but that seems like a very bold move.
Well, in the context of the Athens Monument is fascinating. It was commissioned by a group of women because during Reconstruction, federally imposed martial law forbade men from engaging in this type of activity. So the women created this memorial. It was a new group created by the most famous Georgian, Georgian of the time, most likely. Her name was Mildred Rutherford, and she was a headmistress at the school, the ladies' school. It's escaping
Dots.
Me right now. What is it, Noah? It'll come to me in
is
a second.
Dots?
And they created what's called the Ladies Memorial Association and mm-hmm. dedicated this monument in 1872 and went on to create the Lucy Cobb Institute. Sorry, she was headmistress of the Lucy Cobb Institute for many years, late 1800s into the 1900s, was the historian general of the United Daughters of the Confederacy, president of this Ladies Memorial Association. the Banner Herald is written historically. This was the first monument in Georgia to the Confederate dead. That's under some dispute now, but this was the first. And then they went on to create them all over the state. Mm-hmm. Mildred Rutherford was renowned as the chief proponent of what's called the Lost Cause, seeking to disabuse the nation of the notion that the Civil War was fought over slavery, but that it was instead fought for states' rights.
To own slaves?
To own slaves. And I found out today.
So that's where a lot of that came from, sort of started that, oh, it's just about
the Lost
heritage.
Cause,
and
the birth of a nation came out. The Klan grew in prominence. And the last thing I'll say, I found this out today. The local clavern here in Athens, Georgia, it was the Rutherford Clavern. Right. It was the Rutherford Klan, named in honor of this woman, Miss Mildred Rutherford, who erected this monument on Broad Street.
That's some history that I was, you know, our history is complicated. Southern history is very complicated.
It is funny, though, that Athens has never removed this monument and never moved it to a less. It's right in the center of town.
Well, it has been moved once. It used to be on Washington Street, catty corner to City Hall.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so it's been moved before.
I guess a lot of other towns have just taken these monuments and moved them far out to the periphery or into a park that very few people visit or something like that. Its placement in the center of town is it seems to me, problematic. And I think of Athens as a very, you know, warm, welcoming, broadly based community. But having it there, I think, is a statement. It's a statement.
Right. And, you know, like we said, we all come from someplace different to live in Athens because it does draw people from everywhere. But you think about that, I think almost you see a symbol of the Confederacy in the South, and sometimes you're blinded by it. Sometimes you just, it's so, you know, you're just used to seeing that. You know, it becomes part of the landscape.
Definitely.
But that's changing. Mm-hmm. And this is where we find ourselves where we are. And I know a lot of that is how you ended up starting the anti-discrimination movement is through some kind of ugly incidents downtown right now. I mean, in the very recent past.
Yes, and I people like to say that the monument, no one notices it. You know, why are you concerned about it? I didn't notice it for a while. But
I didn't notice that when I first got. I mean, I noticed it, but I never thought, let me go look and see what this is. It took me a while to do that.
And it's, you know, I don't think that's an excuse to not move, you know, forward with awareness, you know, what it is. And
once you know.
Yeah,
you
once
know.
You know, that's how things happen. So that's not a reason to stop doing anything. And like I continually say, it's not about the people that don't recognize it. It's about the ones that do recognize it and that keep up an ideology because they know it's there, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it is a statement that it's right in the center of downtown, you know, which is supposed to be the heart of the city. And is this, you know, what we want people to see coming from out of town, coming into Athens? Is this the impression we want to make on all the youth at UGA, you know, to show that this town that houses UGA, this is what, you know, we're promoting here, or this is what we're allowing?
And Athens has a large African-American population.
Yes, they do.
And a rich African-American
history.
Heritage.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
If you turn to The Story Untold, a book by Mr. Michael Thurman, now the CEO of DeKalb County, one of the most important elected positions in the state, who born and raised in Athens and is the first black legislator elected from Athens post-Reconstruction. He wrote as a student of history, and he has shed light on the rich African-American history present in Athens, Georgia, that we don't have any physical reminders of that history, commemorating folks like Samuel Harris, who founded Athens Technical School, which became he's the grandfather of vocational education in Georgia. Where's his statue?
Or that's a huge portion of education in Georgia, too.
Yeah, or Lucius Halsey, who was a slave, who taught himself to read and then went on to found Payne College in Augusta, Georgia. Where's his statue? So, you know, we have great African-American history here. Why is that not being celebrated? Why do we keep an obelisk commemorating the Confederacy, but not tell these great stories of African American history, the rich history here, that that needs to be told, deserves to be told.
Yes, and prior to Michael Thurman, during Reconstruction, that was Madison Davis, that out of slavery, you know, he ended up being a Georgia legislator. Also, Alf Richardson, who's kind of been wiped out of history. You know, you can find things where he had a couple of shootouts with the Klan here in town.
Mm. Wow.
This is the first Klan, the 1868 to 72 Klan,
yes.
Really?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's something.
Yeah.
That's nervy.
You know, they used to use his name for people that they thought were uppity blacks. Oh, you're just, basically,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
I've heard that uppity.
Right, that's a familiar
designation before.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, steps from this obelisk, you walk to the historical plaque, right steps from the arch, where it refers to the Civil War as the War of Southern Independence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So again, we are revising the historical record and glossing over the reason of the Civil War, which was the maintenance of slavery, which is apparent in every single article of secession that was drafted by each state of the Confederacy. This is why they fought the Civil War. They wanted, like you said, Alexia, they fought for states' rights to have slaves. So we need to come correct with this history, and this is a great opportunity to do so. Many folks in the community are talking about these issues, not just because of this monument, but also because of the remains of the slaves that were dug up when Baldwin Hall was expanded and unceremoniously moved to Oconee Hill Cemetery. So let's come correct. Let's tell the black history of this community. Let's talk about how slaves built the University of Georgia. Let's come correct with our history so that we can grow together and raise the consciousness of the community, and we'll all be better off for it.
Slaves built a lot of institutions of higher learning.
They built the bricks I know that the big brick buildings around here, most of them are built in these brick furnaces that were staffed almost entirely by slaves in the 1850s. Mm. All of these southern institutions, and this is the thing where the rubber hits the road, right? Is at universities, because you've got people talking about ideas, talking about the future, talking about the past, and a kind of openness to really confront these demons in our past, and then a surrounding community that sometimes reacts very quickly to events, jumps, you know, there's political correctness, there's, you know, virtue signaling or something like that. The troops get called out, and then clashes happen in these university towns, and they're deadly. You know, and so we have to be kind of on guard, and having places like this that are gathering points for not just Klansmen. The Klans, you know, the Klan now is a joke. The Klan in the 20s was a powerful organization. The Klan in the 1860s and 70s was a powerful organization. But these Nazi organizations, the Stormfront and stuff like that, they are no joke. I mean, they're all these young people lining up to join these communities. Fed this kind of crazy history about the race being polluted and stuff like that, straight out of, you know, the sort of Nazi playbook. And then they get a kind of reinforcement when they walk by a Confederate monument that extols the virtues of the Old South. And so this is, you know, this Athens is a flashpoint, just like Charlottesville, just like, you know, Tuscaloosa, that we're going to see more conflict like this, not less. And the place that it's going to happen, unfortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, is going to be places like this, where you have a kind of university town that's got one character, which is kind of more liberal and welcoming, and a surrounding community that may be more troublesome.
Well, you're right. I mean, Nicholson, Georgia, just a handful of miles north of Athens, 6 miles north of Athens. In Jackson County, 6 months ago, erected a Confederate monument in their town square. Mm-hmm. So
everybody else is debating taking them away.
Yeah, so we have laws to take them, that you can't move them or take them away, but there's no laws to say you can't erect anymore.
Yeah, so they're going back up. Yeah, I mean, they're still going up. I mean,
that's very surprising to me in this climate. I mean, you definitely get a strong message.
Yeah. Right.
When somebody is erecting a Confederate monument now mm-hmm. in this environment.
I think we can learn something from Germany. Actually, I've been mm-hmm. watching this Where to Invade Next, Michael Moore's new DVD.
Right. Oh, yeah. I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
It's great. Yeah. Got to see it.
Uh-huh.
Michael, you owe me a check for that. Anyway. But there was a part where he was in the German schools, and they were actually teaching about the Holocaust.
Right.
And they have, and the students were so attentive, and they felt, some of the shame about, mm-hmm. their, the Germans doing what they did. And it was a class where there was actually a black German guy in there, and he was saying that he feels it also because he's German. He's, and people that migrated there and that takes up the German culture, they feel it and they think it's right to learn about it, to make sure it's implemented in the history. Hmm. Don't try to make it like it was a benevolent institution or something. Mm-hmm. And
they were imported workers,
yeah,
according to Texas school books. Mm.
And they have monuments and plaques all over the town to constantly remind you.
Right.
One artist was putting up the old signs from during that time where they would have, anti-Jewish slogans and different things like that on them. And he was like, imagine what America's streets would look like if we put up the signs, the auction blocks and different things like that to remind people. Mm.
Yeah. I was in Leiden in the Netherlands, and there a lot of Jews were rounded up. And out the public art is their steel iron suitcases just sitting on the corner. And it's to remind you about the people who left. And died, and so not in your face in quite the same, not a test, but a sort of gentle reminder of evil, right? That's right there, and that I think there's a real opportunity for art that calls attention to that ugly history in a way that makes you think. Just every time you see it, every time I walk by and saw that suitcase, I thought about those people rounded up.
They're taking ownership of their history. It's
right.
like they are owning it. This
mm-hmm.
is, you,
mm-hmm.
but they obviously have moved past it.
Right,
but,
and that's part of moving past it is your kid walks by and said, "Why is there a suitcase
mm-hmm.
on the ground?"
And you have to explain that
those
ugly.
People were killed. Right. There were all these people that were brought here and killed.
Well, and that's where an opportunity exists here. How do we create something like that that can be a thoughtful reminder, a physical mm-hmm. reminder of our nation's history that tells the truth,
mm-hmm.
Not the veneration
right.
of the Confederacy.
That's,
mm-hmm. we don't remember the Holocaust by looking at statues of Hitler.
Right.
We shouldn't remember the Civil War by looking at statues of Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Let's think about a more thoughtful representation that tells the full story.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy. In Germany, if you are a white supremacist, you can't have a swastika, but mm-hmm. you have to go with the Confederate emblems.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they
use.
That's what they use.
That's their proxy,
right. Because they can't use Nazis use in their country. That's banned.
It's funny the different ways that different people respond to
right.
these things. There was a Marker Zero in Berlin that I visited. Marker Zero was the center of the world, according to the Nazis of the Third Reich. And Marker Zero, and everything was, Paris was 298 miles away from Marker Zero. Everything else was measured in terms of its distance from Marker
Zero. Kind of like north of the border, south of the border.
And so this was the center of the world, according to the Nazis. And when the East Germans take it over, the kind of Russian side, they say this was Marker Zero, but thankfully it has been erased. Just as the Nazis have been erased by the triumphant working class or something like that.
Right.
And then when Germany is reunited, there's another plaque that says, thank goodness that there's no more mark. There's nothing wrong with that monument should go, but there's nothing wrong with a kind of dialogue. What you want is a monument that starts a dialogue, mm-hmm. not a monument that says, look up. Here is history,
because
mm-hmm. history is not, I think, history is about argument. History is about getting it right and thinking it through and wrestling with the ugly, ugly stuff mm-hmm. that we have to wrestle with.
Let me ask you, because you have written books, you're a history professor, you've written books. And one of the books you wrote was dealing with research and how historians conduct
mm-hmm.
their research.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you tell the history honestly,
right.
And get the truth out where, we were laughing and joking, but, you know, Texas did call slaves imported workers, I believe, or something. No, they're slaves, and you can't soften the history.
So this book was actually a children's book. It's a young adult book called Ain't Nothing But a Man, about the legend of John Henry, a man who died fighting a steam drill in a race, and an African-American man. And it's about the real person behind the John Henry story and how I found him. But it's a how-to book about how to do research. And I think that's the lovely thing about putting primary sources in kids' hands. Rather than saying, this is the history, not that, or this is the history, not that, you give them the sources and you say, tell us what you see. Tell us the world that is summoned up by these letters, by these documents, by these songs. And that's powerful, because it's kids resonating with their own experience. This is my experience, and this is also this other person's experience 150 years ago. That to me is history. History is, it's always changing. It's always being contested. It's always being discussed. And it's, when I was in high school, the last class I took was Americanism versus Communism. It was a required course in Florida schools about the virtues of America and the horrors of communism. And I hated history in high school. I thought it was a terrible thing. When I got to college, I discovered that it was about looking at documents and understanding the world. And so, I'm so glad to hear that your organization is also connected with the arts and with artists, because this is really a challenge for artists to open up that history and start to and not tell that, you know, that Confederate statue tells one story. There's no other way of really reading a Confederate statue like that, but art that actually gets you to think and gets you to discuss and gets you to question and gets you to maybe get to your own assumptions and that sort of thing. That to me is what's lovely about history.
And let me ask you guys about people who think that you're just kind of stirring the pot, by drawing attention to it, you're creating unnecessary friction from people who may not necessarily believe they should be there, but when you start saying take them away, then it causes resentment.
Well, I wear that as a badge of honor. I mean, that's life, is stirring the pot. I mean, we could hang out and sip tea on the sidelines and talk about Game of Thrones all day, or we could actually, you know, get into it and talk about how we're going to build a better community. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of discussion about how we can move this monument. And there is a state law on point that prohibits the moving of these monuments. It was part of a bill passed as a compromise when we changed the state flag in the early 2000s. Tommy Benton, the state house member up in Jackson County, he got this compromise bill put in place which would forbid the movement of these monuments. I don't think we should take it down and destroy it, but we can move it, because within this provision of the law, it reads, provided, however, so you can't move the monuments, provided, however, that appropriate measures for the preservation, protection, and interpretation of such monuments or memorials shall not be prohibited. So that allows an exception for our government to act here.
We'll leave it to the lawyer to let us know that there is a loophole.
There is a loophole. And thank you
for that. And Russell, you will have to have the last word. We are out of time. I do want to thank my guests, Noah Johnson, Professor Scott Nelson, and Russell Edwards. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.